Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's call. All participants are in listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing star then one on your touch-tone telephone. Please keep in mind today's conference is being recorded, and I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Kathleen Farrell, Communications Director of the National Immigration Forum. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and welcome to the National Immigration Forum press call. Reports are unclear following an immigration-focused meeting at the White House on Tuesday. From what we understand, the immigration proposals that participants discuss are not the kinds of solutions we need. We're fortunate to have people with us on the call today who will speak to the need for bipartisan solutions that provide smart border security, respond to workforce needs, and honor our values of compassion towards people who are vulnerable. With us on the call are Chief Victor Rodriguez of the McAllen, Texas Police Department, Andrea Castaneda Lauber, youth pastor at Orange Church of the Nazarene in Orange, Texas, Andres Pariga, a dreamer and an oil and gas design engineer in Oklahoma City, and Ali Nirani, executive director here at the National Immigration Forum. Chief Rodriguez, please go ahead.
Good afternoon. The city of McAllen has become a focal point on this particular issue here recently. In the most recent years, immigration today is a topic of as it relates to the border issues. There have been others over the last number of years. But right now, we are facing a humanitarian. We're facing a health crisis, and we're facing a public safety crisis. And in our view, it will continue until we get our leadership in Washington, D.C. to establish immigration reform that people can abide by. And thereafter, you know, whatever it is, support it in the right way. Right now, Border Patrol officials here in McAllen don't have the means. They've got people literally sleeping in yards, in everything they can possibly find in pathways, in hallways, and then some of this then on spills all to McAllen. Now, as far as McAllen is concerned, because we are here and because we are at this focal point, we suffer as well. There is a negative perspective about McAllen from people from all over the world. We just had a group here from all over the world here last week, and they come here because they want to see what it is that this border situation is causing the city of McAllen and how it's impacting the city of McAllen. And the realities are very, very different. At the end of 2018, the city of McAllen recorded its ninth consecutive annual crime rate and crime volume reduction. At the end of 2018, we recorded the lowest crime in McAllen in 34 years. We say 34 years because we have no more data beyond 34 years. When people think that the sky is falling along the border, and especially along these border cities, exactly the opposite is the truth. Many things go to making this happen, but certainly the city of McAllen is doing its best to balance the problem that we are confronted with, and at the same time service the community we have a right to and a duty to service here in McAllen. So with that said, I can take it from there later on with questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Chief. And now I'm going to turn it over to Pastor Andrea Castaneda Lauber, who is a pastor at Orange Church of the Nazarene in Orange, Texas. Please go ahead, Pastor.
Good afternoon. This is Pastor Andrea Castaneda Lauber, and as Kathleen said, I am a pastor on staff for the Church of the Nazarene. My family came here from El Salvador when I was 5 years old, and I'm a TPS recipient. Since we immigrated here, I have invested and studied in our public schools in the U.S., and I have excelled. I have attended college and also excelled. I have grown up, and my parents have always paid taxes. They are homeowners. My father is a pastor. I am a pastor. My brother is preparing for full-time ministry as well. I am a taxpayer and a devoted contributor to the young people of our country. As a person on TPS myself, my family and all on TPS have been vetted and fingerprinted every 18 months and have been allowed to remain here because of our character and our commitment to following the rules and laws of our land. And more importantly, as an evangelical Christian, the reason I speak out for immigrants such as myself, my family, and many others is because of my commitment to the fact that I believe that every single living and breathing human being is made in the image and likeness of God and has gifts and graces that make our American community better. Because of my conviction that every human being is made in the image of God, I have an even deeper conviction that the fair and humane treatment of immigrants is as much of a pro-life issue as abortion. I love this country. I am passionate about the future of our country, and I believe that I am just as rooted here as other Americans, despite my immigration status. Over this last year and a half, my family has come, my family and my life has come to a halt because of the cancellation of TPS. I have had to put vacations on hold, which has not allowed me to contribute to our tourism department as I normally would. I have had to put my passion for foster care and adopting on hold, despite the fact that our foster care system is overflowing with need. And I have had to put having children of my own on hold, despite the fact that the National Center for Health Statistics shows that our mortality rate cannot currently keep up with the amount of people being born into our country. Myself and many others on TPS are committed and rooted members of our society. And this cancellation of our temporary protected status and the instability that it has thrown us into, our families and our communities into, there's a sense of our wings being clipped and of us not allowing to contribute and thrive in all of the ways that we are gifted and passionate. We contribute to our society and we make our United States of America better. I would be happy to address any of these things that I have mentioned. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Pastor. And our next speaker is Andres Parilla, a dreamer and oil and gas design engineer from Oklahoma City. Please go ahead, Andres.
Hey, thank you, Catherine. Hey, guys, I appreciate your time. I'll just keep it short and sweet. So to give you a little bit of myself, some background, I came here when I was 6 years old. So this was in 2000, 25, about to go on 26 here in July. And I found myself, acknowledging and kind of learning about this whole dreamer thing, something that I never even crossed my mind as I grew up here in this country. At the time when I had graduated high school and was applying for universities. So I graduated from high school with a 4.2 GPA, a straight-A student, was involved in sports, student council, and different things, a part of the National Honor Society. And I was always, I think something that my parents instilled in my heart and my being was just always to give back to my community. So doing community service in a town where I live, Yukon, Oklahoma, which is predominantly, white American people, and there's about, I don't know, I'd say 15% Hispanic. But like I said, this thing of being a dreamer, it never really fazed me until, Obama passed the law and this action in 2012, and my process for applications were being essentially put to a stop, because at the time I didn't know. I wasn't even aware, I didn't have a social security number or any of this. Another reason why it became so true to me and it kind of affected my life and my being was also when it got time to get my license and different things like that. One of the first things they ask is kind of your birth certificate or your social security number, both of these things which I didn't have. But with God's grace and through people who knew of ways to essentially get enrolled into college. I was able to attend Oklahoma City Community College for 3 years, where I got my pre-engineering degree. And then I went to the University of Oklahoma from 2015 to 2017, where I finished a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. So there was a lot of difficulties of being, you know, while being a dreamer, that I had to face with my family. And thankfully, you know, there was always a solution. And I think for me, that's one of the things that drove me to engineering, is there's always a solution for a problem. There's always a solution for anything that's going on. It's just a matter of finding it. And you kind of to retract. So another thing, after when I graduated high school, I was a recipient for an Oklahoma's Promise, which essentially you get if you keep up your grades and you don't get in trouble, which I never did, you know, you're qualified to get full paid tuition at a public university. Well, due to my immigration status, once again, I wasn't able to use any of that. So, you know, I was always looking, and my family and different friends and family helped me find different resources, private resources or community development agencies, LCDA here in Oklahoma. I was actually offered one of the largest scholarships they've ever given out to any student. And with that, I was able to basically pay for my 3 years at my community college. So, you know, from an education standpoint of view, I think dreamers, that is one of the biggest things that we face, is just really a financial crisis for us to continue and further our education. You know, when the whole Dream Act passed, I mean, just being able to have a Social Security and have the freedom to apply for education without any worries was such a big deal for me, and I'm sure it is for, you know, the hundreds of thousands of us that are out there. So fast forward, you know, with the Dream Act that was passed, I was able to graduate from school, and after I graduated from college, I went and did an internship in Little Rock with a oil and gas company called Cameron. Then 7 months later, I was able to get a full-time job as a mechanical engineer for an oil and gas company called Weir. So, you know, without having this opportunity, if the Dream Act was shut down, none of this would have been possible. There's no way I would be able to be where I am now. And because of the investment that people have made in the government and within my community here in Oklahoma, you know, with that investment that they made in my life, I was truly driven to start a foundation. So this past November of last year, on November 9th, I founded a nonprofit 501c3 foundation called Spark. And plain and simple, our mission is to raise awareness of what DACA is, because when you talk to a lot of people about, hey, you know what DACA is, it's crazy, but they don't really know. They don't really know what it is, what it stands for, or they have a misconception of it. One of it really being that DACA recipients are all Hispanic, which is completely not true. And so one of my nonprofit's mission is to bring awareness of what DACA is and what it's not, and raise funds through connecting businesses here in Oklahoma and also in Louisiana, Texas, and Washington, where some of our founding board members are located, and just bring awareness to the situation, connect businesses, therefore impacting our communities and making them stronger, and then just helping dreamers and American citizens as well. So our first scholarship that we handed out actually this past February at the Colombian Student Association at the Colombian Student Association at the University of Oklahoma, where I was the president of, our first scholarship recipient was an American citizen. And so, you know, all of these things, our foundation is driven to help people further education. Now, I want to focus on the dreamers just because of the financial struggles that we face. But again, guys, this, without me being a dreamer, I don't think I would be able to have dreams. And that's something that the United States, this beautiful country, has offered me, has offered my family, honestly. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons when we look at the big scheme of things, people aren't leaving their countries because they just want to leave. There's a bigger reason. And for those who are looking to better their way of life, they're leaving to a better way of life, and that's to the United States of America. And because the U.S. offered me that, and through the DACA Act, and that's something that I'm striving to get back and just help others within my community here and across the states and in the United States. So, there's a bunch of ways that we could talk about how it's going to affect Dreamers and families, guys. But just plain and simple, we're Americans without a citizenship, and I think talking or even coming across the idea about removing Dreamers, it's completely crazy because you're removing American people. So, I really appreciate, and I hope that my message has some sort of effect and shows you what myself and I'm sure hundreds of thousands of others are doing and the way they feel about this country and what they want to do. So I appreciate you guys' time, and if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andres, for sharing your story and your perspective. And our final speaker this afternoon is our Executive Director, Ali Nirani. Please go ahead, Ali.
Sure. Oh, thank you, Kathleen. And I just wanted to start with a thank you to Chief Rodriguez, Pastor Lauver, and then Andres for not just sharing your stories, but really bringing the reality that you live, whether it's on the border, as a pastor, or as a dreamer, to this debate. So as we know, over the last few weeks, there's been a lot of chatter about coming out of the White House about a plan being pulled together by Jared Kushner. There are some good things that come out of this process. There are some things that lead to a lot of questions. The good things are that the White House, or at least a portion of the White House, is trying to develop a solution that looks at our legal immigration system, a solution that potentially looks at what are realistic solutions, what's a realistic approach along the border. The challenge is that we have yet to see any details, really, of what the White House is considering, what the White House is thinking of putting forward. But we're going to remain cautiously optimistic that the White House is going to act in the best interests of the country to put forward an immigration proposal that meets the needs of the American worker and their families. As the chief identified, spoke, there are need for resources along the border that care for these families, that ensures that these families can go through an asylum process in a fair and timely manner. We're not saying that every individual that applies or asks for asylum should receive protections, but we strongly believe that those who ask for asylum should be able to pursue their cases in a timely and fair manner, and in a fashion where they can remain with their communities and their families. What Pastor Lauver spoke about in terms of those with temporary protected status, imagine living life on an 18-month timeline. And in this case, after the end of that 18-month window, being completely unsure of what comes next. In the coming weeks, we'll see legislation move forward in the House to address temporary protected status recipients, the Dream and Promise Act. It would be great to see similar legislation moving forward in the Senate and supported by the President. And then finally, with respect to Dreamers, we have 800,000 recipients of deferred action for childhood arrivals, as Andres referred to. Again, this is a population that will be discussed and hopefully addressed in the Dream and Promise Act in the House in the coming weeks. And it also would be great to see similar legislation in the Senate that also should be supported by the President. All to say, in Washington, D.C., there's always a lot of rhetoric, but we actually need some solutions that are passed into law and that address the very real situations that were laid out by our speakers today. So thank you for the opportunity, and thank you, folks on the phone, for sharing your perspectives on this.
Thank you, Ali. Operator, would you please explain to media on the call how to queue for questions?
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, that's star 1 for questions, and we can pause a moment to allow questions to queue.
While we're waiting for media to queue up and ask their questions, Chief, I'd like to ask you, how is your community reacting to the influx of migrants on the border? You mentioned the civil authorities. How are the people of McAllen receiving migrants?
Well, the people of McAllen, the city of McAllen, we've seen this and we responded to this in a humanitarian way. There are lots of reasons for this. Number one of the things to understand in this process, and we're talking about the human trafficking piece of this at this point in time, but this also is the same with regard to, let's say, drug trafficking and things like that. But as this relates to the geographic part of this, the thing about the situation we're facing right now is that we have thousands of people that are detained on a daily basis that traverse through McAllen, and that's the key word right there. They traverse through McAllen. They're not coming to land in McAllen. So for us, it's a daily sustenance kind of problem, as opposed to long-term, shanty towns, things like that. Our situation is geographic, and we're a crossing point. We're not a destination point. So because of that, we're not seeing the street problems, the public safety problems, and things like that we've talked about. Quite the contrary, our crime numbers are 9 years in a row down. Record 34-year low down. We're working on year number 10 right now. They're still going down. So for us here, it's not a situation where we are taking in hundreds of thousands of people into our city, and then having to deal with, how to get them to assimilate, sustain them, jobs, and those kinds of things. We are a crossing point, and their stay here is short-lived. So for us, it's a daily sustenance kind of a problem. The city of McAllen and the community here has been reactive in a humanitarian way all the way through. We try to help them, find an overnight place to stay at various places around here, get them on buses, get them on transportation onto the points of their destination. So that's the issue that we're facing here, and in a short word, the way we have reacted here is in a humanitarian way to a humanitarian problem.
Thank you, Chief. Pastor Lover, you said that you're from El Salvador. You're a TPS recipient. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That right? What's your current status? What's that mean? How long is your status? How long do you have that status?
We have TPS status until January of 2020. This past year, it was extended because of some legislation or because of a court case. And so we originally had until September of 2019.
Thank you. Operator, do you want to remind press on the call how to queue for questions?
Certainly. Once again, that's star and one if you would like to ask a question today.
Okay, well, I don't think we're getting any questions, so I'm going to thank the panelists very much for their time this afternoon, and I wish you all a very pleasant rest of your day. Thanks very much.